92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Eh, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Hello, and welcome to The Nature Connection, Science, Wildlife, and Environment Radio, with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Nature Connection show. Today, we welcome Kate Wall. She is a senior legislative manager at IFAW, which is the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And she's joining us today to talk about wildlife corridors and also the Wildlife Corridors Conservation Act and how it's connected to the Invest in America Act, which is really the infrastructure bill we keep hearing on the news. And I encourage you to go to their website. It's ifaw.org. But welcome, Kate. How are you?
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing good. I love that your cat's running around in the house there. You know, Nancy's normally on the show with us. As many people know, Nancy and I travel the country full time to document parks and public lands as part of our Parks and Travel magazine. And during this last year of COVID, part of our travel, you can imagine what it's like being full-time travelers. And then, sorry, like this is closed, that's closed. We ended up pet sitting, of all things. And it turned out to be so cool because we miss having our own animals around and travel. So now we're pet sitting and she's taking care of three Shih Tzus. And I just walk around the house going, Shih Tzu, Shih Tzu, I can say it. But they will say something somewhere, I'm sure. But she says hi. And, you know, the organization I've actually heard of quite a few times. And I'm really glad to have you on to also, you know, give everybody this. It's interesting because you're international. It's a, you know, looking at animal welfare around the world. I was looking at your website closely, like, okay, let me make sure, because you've always got to make sure about nonprofits, not nonprofits, who's what and where. But it seems to me from everything I got that it's really about, you have a lot of different programs, but it's about coexistence is what I got out of what I was looking at.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be here. Glad to get to talk to you on your program. So I thought we are the International Fund for Animal Welfare. We have 15 offices around the world. We work on the ground in more than 40 countries around the world. And you're right, we are focused on coexistence. For us, it's about where humans and wildlife interact. So whether that's finding ways to help people live with the wildlife, help people solve human-wildlife conflict, help people value and appreciate the importance of animals in their lives, both the, you know, their pets and the wildlife. And we actually do also a lot of disaster rescue work. So we are on the ground in disaster areas, helping people who have been displaced by fires to care for their animals and be reunited with their animals. So you're right. We really do recognize the integral connection between wildlife, other animals, and human well-being. And we really try to nurture that.
And wildlife trafficking is a big deal too. And that's, I think people, we've done a gazillion shows on human trafficking, wildlife trafficking, and there's so drug trafficking, all of it is connected in one lump of what's going on.
That's so true. And thank you for raising that. You know, people don't get involved in wildlife trafficking because they hate elephants or they hate pangolin or they hate rhinoceros. Mm-hmm. They're criminals trafficking in whatever they can make money trafficking.
It's about money. And yeah.
Right? Like it's about the money. And unfortunately in wildlife trafficking, as well as human trafficking, you're dealing in so much cruelty. That's not the point of it though. So the point from the IFAW perspective is to try to make it much harder for wildlife traffickers to traffic in wildlife, to shut down those networks, which, as you say, can be home not only to wildlife trafficking, but human trafficking, drug trafficking, arms trafficking. They're all going through the same routes, often the same people. And sometimes wildlife trafficking is the hook. It's the area where the traffickers are maybe not paying as close attention. And so by focusing on wildlife trafficking, we're not only protecting biodiversity, stopping animal cruelty, but also shutting down networks that are causing harm in other areas as well.
Yeah, I know. We've done shows on where, like, the Middle East, they're like, you know, they got money from oil and like, hey, now we have a pet cheetah. Look at this in the back of my limo or sports car, you know. And social media has made it almost easier to catch, but also harder at the same time. It's like almost like their place to go, hey, here we are, and not. But that's another show. We could do that any day. But today we're talking about wildlife corridors. And I think this is really important. Nancy and I, as we travel the country, we document parks. We are always, this is the thing. I photograph wildlife as a observer landscape style. You know, I want people to see it. You don't need to have the big fancy lens to look at wildlife. I want you to see it as it is in front of you, not get in the animal's way. But half of the time, even in national parks, you're seeing the wildlife actually on the roadways. And there's just this story that went around social media about a ranger out in Yosemite talking about what he has to do when someone screams around the corner, hits a bear, they have to set up a wildlife cam, and what happens from there. I mean, we were just in the Grand Canyon not even 2 months ago, and there was a dead elk because someone, and obviously a motorcycle or car accident, and it was the dead elk was right there and parts of the car or motorcycle. And yet I watched people careen by and I'm going, you're in a national park. There is like a speed limit sign. Your body actually even knows what level of speed you should be going. Yet this was going on. And I mean, if those areas are impacted, what are our major roadways, our regular, even neighborhoods going through in regards to not hitting an animal for the animal's sake and for the human's sake?
Yeah, this is such a great topic because I think we all feel connected to animals, right? Nobody wants to hit a deer. I mean, doesn't have a death wish.
No.
Because it ends poorly for the deer and for the driver. And you know, as we were talking about just before the show, animals have to be able to move from their houses outside of their house areas as well. If deer live in the park near your house, that's great. But if they can't get to a different food source, another water source, if it's hot and dry outside, if they can't find other deer, then they're not going to be happy and healthy. And so what corridors can do is connect up those green spaces, connect up areas so that you have species like deer, like raccoons, like elk, like mountain lion, like bear, all of these species that need to be able to move around in order to thrive and survive and remain part of our healthy ecosystems. And part of those corridors can be crossings. So what you're talking about when you have a motorway where you're separating two habitats, we need to be able to provide some way for animals to get from one side of that roadway to another that doesn't involve playing sort of dodge a car on a highway. And that's great for the animals. It's great for us too. I was stunned when I learned, when I first started working in this issue area, we spend, just in the United States, roughly $8 billion, that's with a B, $8 billion every year on human-wildlife collisions, collisions.
What? Just in cleanup, medical?
So in medical costs, in property damage. I mean, if you hit an elk, you're not walking away with your car in one piece. As you saw bits of car all over the roadway. That's because if the person who hit that elk survived, they're in the market for a new car or a motorcycle. Their other was totaled. And so this is hugely costly to us as individuals and as a society. Also, you know, something like 26,000 injuries and deaths occur every year in the United States as a result of these wildlife vehicle collisions. So wildlife crossings can help to alleviate that. You know, if you Google wildlife crossings, you're going to see some of the most wonderful content of different animals traipsing over bridges or under bridges, traipsing over waterways, across railways. And these animals learn to recognize the cars, the trains as danger, and they very quickly take to these wildlife crossings. And we've seen as much as 90% reductions in wildlife vehicle collisions in areas where crossings have been put in. So it's phenomenal for wildlife and for us.
So I've seen like actual roadways, like a bridge overpass. I remember years ago doing a show, I think it was NPCA, which I know you guys work with, the National Parks Conservation Association. They rock, and they're
a fantastic partner.
Listen,
we love them.
Listen, it's their fault we went on the National Parks tour that we started, which was the Spirit of America tour. And now it's a Love Your Parks tour, because we actually really did have to recognize that all parks matter, getting to the point of wildlife crossings. All parks matter. All national park units actually need a buffer zone, like a forest and a national forest and a state park or a community park. And we're seeing more and more of these alliances coming together because it's important, whether it's a waterway like you're talking about. That's something we don't think about. When we were in Yuma, Arizona, the lower portion of the Colorado River, 49 agencies got together to restore the wetlands. The East and West Wetlands is now the Yuma Crossing National Heritage Area. And when I talk about 49 agencies, some of them are tribal. Two different tribal agencies got together. The Kokopah and the Kishans. Also, you're talking about city and all these farms and all these agencies. As they started to restore it, the beaver came back. And the beaver are able to, hey, we don't care if we're on tribal land. We don't care if we're over by your RV park. But the beaver are back, which is really healthy for the river and makes the water better. It's this whole ecosystem works. So it's not just the road crossings. The river crossings is something important. And that also means about boating responsibly, right? It's not about... our tour really kicked off in the Everglades National Park when we were talking about this. And then we went to the Everglades and we went on a boat with NPCA and learned that anyone could just get a boat. They don't even really need a boating license like we do a driver's license and just get out there. And they were talking about poling and trolling. Yeah, I didn't make up those words. But talking about how you don't go through certain rookeries at certain times and speed your boat up. So it's not just crossing, but these are fly zones and water zones, water crossing zones. So we're talking multiple. I mean, these crossings are air, water, land, right?
Absolutely. It's why we have speed restrictions in places where we have manatees or critically endangered North Atlantic.
We saw a manatee yesterday.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. I'm jealous.
Yeah, but it was so far away. It was under a canal in the Merritt Island National Wildlife Refuge. It was just, he was right there. We're like, he's there. We saw him and gators, but it was protected. And we were thinking about our conversation with you. There was like bear crossings and alligator crossings. And we're like, these signs, whenever you see them, we're like, dude, look out, because you may see one and you're thinking protectively, but you're also like, cool. So, I mean, there's these other crossings I want to talk about, but isn't just the sign part of that helpful wake up call for the driver or the boater or, you know, the flyer, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Signs are fantastic. I mean, that's what they're there for. We're taught from an early age that we should pay attention to signs.
Yeah.
Driving in my area, I'm not convinced that everybody retained that from their driver's ed, but
no,
we should.
Across the country, I'm just going to say, but we're part way there. Yeah.
But yeah, these signs are a fantastic way of not only pointing out that you need to slow down for your own safety and that of the wildlife, but also you may be in for a fantastic view. Who doesn't want to see a manatee? Who doesn't want to see an elk, right? And so if you slow down and pay attention, you may get that reward.
So right now, as we're talking, for those who are watching on Facebook and YouTube, you see the picture behind me is actually bighorn sheep. And this is in New Mexico, just above Taos. And we took a detour on our way to Red River. And as we hit the forest area, as we drove in, hit's a bad word for what we're talking about. But as we turned around after a really major detour that almost did something bad to my car, but anyway, we went off on an off, like, anyway, we went on an excursion that I hit a bunch of snow and ice that I shouldn't have. But anyway, we turned around, went back to where the bed and breakfast owner, Dreamcatcher B&B people said, go down here. And when we turned around, went down here, there's this like turquoise blue water area. And it's amazing. We were in the national forest. And as soon as we hit there, there's a sign, Bighorn Sheep Crossing. We're like, oh, cool. That'd be cool. Watch. See, for us, we're like, slow down, be on the lookout. We might see animals. So we park by the water. We're walking around. We're about to get in the car and keep going. And lo and behold, here comes all the bighorn sheep. This photo, you can't see it the way it is, but I do have the footage. They literally gathered around under their sign, Bighorn Sheep Crossing sign. And this is not the first time it's happened. It happened to us in Nevada. So whoever's putting these signs up, there's research going in it. It's not just like, hey, you know, so obviously some accidents possibly have happened. They mm-hmm. know wild horses in Nevada on the Pony Express Trail, like on Highway 50, those things happen. And so we're putting signs up to let you know, slow the heck down, keep aware. And also, like you said, we're going to see something cool, hopefully.
Right. And I can vouch for the fact that there are transportation and wildlife agencies working hand in hand in state all over the country, at the federal level, at the state level, at the municipal level, to identify areas where wildlife are crossing roadways, need to move from one area to another. And there's a lot, as you said, Lisa, there's so much research, so much care that's going into this, and it really is having impacts, positive impacts, where the implementation can happen. We need more funding for it because it's not cheap. But again, we're spending $8 billion a year on wildlife vehicle collisions. So wouldn't it be better if we were spending it to prevent those vehicle collisions?
Can we just at least do that $8 billion in protection, right? Put up the fence so the dog doesn't get out, right? There's the signs that we're talking about. Then there's these actual bridges, right? Where, like, you know, before we talked on the show and we started, put the record button on. Nance and I, you know, lived in South Africa and Kenya for many years. And Kenya, as a little kid, I was really one of those lucky people who got to witness multiple times the wildlife migration of the wildebeest and the zebras and watch them crossing over the rivers. And once they have that bee in their bonnet, it's like the whales going down the coast for their, you know, they go from the Bering Sea down to Mexico, the Sierra Cortez and back. Migration routes are migration routes. Anybody into bird watching understands this. Once they start heading that way, they do. And then we're depleting their resources. So habitat plays a role. So when the migration happens, there's also got to be not just a road sign, because they already know, but there's also bridges that are being created for them, right? Like, this is a whole Wyoming, I think, like I said, with MPCA was something we covered years ago. And it turned out to be a really positive thing with these actual bridges, that these are bridges for animals to cross and you can, you know, keep driving or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're seeing these bridges not only all over the US, but all over the world.
Oh, cool.
These wildlife crossings and over bridges, under bridges, just ways that wildlife can cross roads. And I think the one you're referencing in Wyoming is the Path of the Pronghorn.
Yes.
So, yeah. So this is a migratory route of pronghorn. And
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Nah, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with the 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial. 92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
It it can involve bridges. It also involves changing fencing a little bit, because I guess pronghorn can't jump, but they can get under fences if fencing is made a little bit higher. So there are ways that farmers were happy to work with wildlife managers to just change their fencing so that they were still keeping their livestock.
And students actually helped with the land of that MPCA. They have like a student corps that went out and changed the fencing, which was
so
cool.
How fun is that too, right? To be part of a project like that, that has an impact on the local community, on the pronghorn. It's fantastic. And yeah, you're so right. It's just about a migratory route is a migratory route. And we are going to lose species if we don't make those migratory routes available to them. That's really our choice. We're not going to be able to do a big sort of change your migratory route campaign for the monarch butterfly or the pronghorn. No matter how much social media we do, they're not going to pay any attention.
The Canadian geese will still take their flight, you know, and it's
they're
not going to
take their flight.
They are. It's interesting. People, you know, the one thing about pet sitting is you start to, you're in migratory areas, like where, you know, people, homeowners are like, well, this bird came this year, which we've never had. And I'm like, well, things are getting a little different out there with climate change. And so, you know, they may be coming earlier or later, maybe didn't notice them before. You know, so there's these interesting, we're getting, because most people who have pets also care about what's going on in their natural backyard. And it's been really interesting. I'm almost feeling like I need to do like a study on what's in the backyards, you know. With that, because we're seeing pattern changes, but that's part of we're landing in a concrete jungle where before it wasn't. And I look at animal DNA, deer, we're talking about deer. I know being on the Sequoia National Park, one of our park ranger friends was explaining to us every time we go to this one area, we're seeing the same deer family. And she says they really have this one region that they hang out in. And as we encroach, this is the beauty of park systems, that they can keep doing that. But as we encroach inland, these deer are being shifted from what their DNA knows. And that's where confusion happens and animals end up on roadways not understanding. So I wonder about that part with this whole bridges and crossings and letting them know you do have a place like here, here, here. And once they get to know that, it's like kind of recreating a little bit of a new route, but they don't want to get in front of a car. None of them.
No, of course not. None of us do.
You know, no, but I love this idea of getting this out. You have the Wildlife Corridors Act. So that's part of the Invest America Act, the infrastructure bill that everybody's still, just get on with it now, but we want the right things in it. And the, you know, so regardless of how that goes, are there things we can do as just regular homeowners or not even homeowners, just citizens or people to help animals and then help maybe even, I don't know if at this part it has to go to the Senate, right? So it's past the House. What can we do? That's my point. What can we do?
Yeah. So the legislative side, well, legislation can get tricky. The Wildlife Corridors Conservation Act, as you said, which would help to establish corridors, which can include the crossings, the bridge structures and the underpass structures, but can also include changing of fence structures, reestablishing habitat so that you have, perhaps you have two different green spaces, right? You have a national park on one side of the city, and then you have a big city and you have a state park on the other side of the city, right? How does wildlife get from that national park to the state park or the state park to the national park if they have to go through the city? Well, a wildlife corridor can be as simple as maybe establishing some plantings along a route through that city or around that city that helps to guide wildlife from area to area in a protected, safe manner. And that might include an overpass over a waterway. It can also include an underpass under a highway. But then it can also include just a little bit of green space, a little bit of flora that helps to to just show wildlife, here's the pathway that you should be taking.
We're dangling the carrot.
Point A to point B. Right, exactly.
But we're giving you food along the way. Can this kind of way that you're talking about be something where, you know, we look at parks and public lands, like that's part of, we went to really only covering national park units to all parks matter, because we learned like parks mean something. Not everyone's going to get to Yosemite, for example, which we hope they do, but it's, you know, but every 10 miles, like every 10 minutes or so, someone should be able to get to a park immediately from their home and have that green space for their own health. So when we look at humans in this sphere, which I find very important when we talk about wildlife, that humans understand that wildlife means everything to their well-being, human well-being. If we create green spaces and more of these trails, that could also be a human trail where you could go hike, maybe not walk your dog, absolutely, depending. So those can be those kind of corridors.
And corridors, you know, when we talk about, yes, absolutely. And when we talk about the wildlife that use corridors, you know, our minds immediately go to things like the species like the bighorn sheep or the pronghorn, but we're really talking about everything. We're talking about pollinators like bees and butterflies. Mm. So there are things you can do in your own apartment or your own home. If you have a windowsill, you can plant, you can put a window box out with some native plants in it that a bee can stop over in, or a butterfly can stop
milkweed,
over in,
baby,
to get some pollen.
Yeah.
Right, exactly, to get some pollen. If you've got larger space, like a backyard, I would encourage you to let it go a little bit wild. Maybe don't cut the grass all the time. Put in some native plants that species like to eat, everything from berries and seeds for birds on up to, you know, obviously more flowers for pollinators. In our backyard, we live right outside of Washington, D.C., and we plant some native sunflowers that the deer actually love to eat. And when people complain about deer eating their flowers, I say, well, send them over to our yard.
Yeah, and they smile. They literally smile when they get to a flower, you know. You know, this is, it's important that we have these spaces for them. You know, if you've got your prized petunias, cover them with, just get over it. But no, everybody has their things, you know. We can have this coexistence, which is what I love about IFAW, is that you have this coexistence, like we can do this and that. The Wildlife Corridors Act, I think, is really important, because it's something, regardless with this transportation bill, I mean, we're hopeless on this now, right? This is, as a citizen, we can't do anything, but we can talk to our local representatives and say, hey, we want this to happen, right? I mean, where are we,
absolutely,
on that? Can we still call and say, dude, pass this?
Absolutely. So, you know, there's always more than one. It's funny we're talking about corridors here, because there's always more than one pathway in Congress,
yeah,
and in the administration for different things to happen. So we do have this Wildlife Corridors Conservation Act, which is a standalone bill, but also was attached to the the surface transportation bill.
Well, that's important. That makes sense. Yes.
So, but it's still a standalone bill. So you can still call your federal representatives, your federal senators, and say, I support wildlife corridors. I would like to see support for wildlife corridors in a transportation bill. I would like to see the Wildlife Corridors Transportation Act passed this Congress. And I would absolutely urge people to do it. Don't be afraid if you're members of Congress. They're just people, and the people answering their phone are just people, and they work for us. We're,
yeah,
citizens, we're voters.
We pay taxes for this.
Right? We pay taxes for this. We elect them. This is the People's Congress, right? Mm. And we can and should be calling them and writing to them and saying, these are the things that are important to me. And wildlife corridors is a great area to talk about. We can also be talking to the administration. Mm. We can be reaching out to the administration and saying, you know what? Wildlife corridors are really important. We would like to see the administration do more to protect wildlife corridors. Wildlife crossings are part of corridors, but there's an additional $400 million for wildlife crossings, which are those bridges and underpasses we've been talking about.
That's awesome.
That were included in that House language, and $350 million for wildlife crossings were included in a similar bill in the Senate, which hasn't passed the Senate yet. But again, these are things that we can always be talking to our members of Congress about and saying, I vote, I'm a constituent, I care about my community, and I care about wildlife corridors and crossings, and I want you to support them.
And this is safety. This is, you know, you may not care about wildlife or animals, but do you not care about, you know, your grandson taking his first car ride to the prom and then, you know, hitting an elk?
Absolutely.
And potentially dying. I mean, I think about all the truck drivers. I mean, I think about the amount of driving I've done and how much of it is like, suddenly there is a bear on the side of the road, like, oh, slam on brakes. And if you're not aware enough, and people do fall asleep at the wheel, let me tell you, just the amount of driving.
I'm sure you've seen it all.
I have seen it all. I should write a book about that. But it's really, really important, because we see, you think when you get on an interstate that, oh, well, we're on an interstate, we don't have to worry about wildlife like we do on a scenic byway. No, that is absolutely not true. I was telling you about Dead Deer Highway in Texas, you know, where it's just one dead deer after the other, and they will come out onto major Interstate 10, I-10, that really traverses our country, and you will hit a deer. Your potential is, I'm not saying you will, but your potential is to hit a deer is high if you're going at night. And you think, oh, you can stay by the 75 to 80 mile per hour, you know, speed limit. That doesn't mean you do it at night. It doesn't mean you do it in rainstorms, just saying, after what I just went through. But no, but the animals are not going to read those signs. Those signs are for us. And when you see wildlife crossing signs, if a lot of times it's about them getting to a water source. Yep. And so, you know, there's obviously been crashes there before, and people know the wildlife cross there, so read them. And the more we can get of them, the better. And the more corridors, the better. So the wildlife and the humans can kind of coexist, like what you're talking about is that coexistence thing. And lastly, rest areas. I want to give a shout out to all the rest areas that have monarch way stations and pollinator gardens. See, you're talking about corridors. There's just so many ways to do it, and we can all get involved. And I want everyone to go to your website,
ifaw.org.
I got it. All right. ifaw.org. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Anything else we can do? Did I miss anything?
There's just one last point I want to make regarding corridors. You know, I like to think we all like wildlife, but maybe not everybody does. One of the reasons it's so important, just apart from our human safety, not hitting large wild animals, is that wildlife is part of the healthy ecosystems we all rely on. If we don't have wildlife, we don't have land that can support farming. We don't have air that we can breathe. We don't have water that we can drink. Because if you move wildlife out of ecosystems, those ecosystems start to collapse. And that means, you were talking about beavers moving back into areas. Those beavers are helping the land around those areas to retain water so that farming and agricultural practices can go on and we have food to eat in this country. You know, internationally, elephants bring water up from below the surface to irrigate huge areas. You know, as part of the global community, we all rely on wildlife, whether we know it or not, just to live our daily lives.
Yes.
And so we're in the midst of an extinction crisis. We need to be doing everything we can to protect biodiversity, because we're also protecting ourselves. Even if you don't love animals, you're protecting yourself by protecting biodiversity. And corridors and crossings are a great way to do that.
And that includes the habitat. Because yes, we have to have the habitat. It's something that always gets left out of the animal discussion, which I go nuts about. You do not have wildlife without the habitat.
Nope.
We
and
keep
vice
chopping
versa.
Them. Yeah,
you can't take them apart. You can't have one without the other.
It's that, exactly. And so as we build new highways, you always see this, oh, they want to put one through Saguaro National Park again. No, you know, why? Have some patience. Look at having, you know, communal transportation. You know, there's just this, let's keep putting highways in certain areas that just really, there are areas that you could do it. Absolutely.
But we cannot continue that level of paving over wild spaces and protect ourselves as a species.
Doesn't it also hurt our water table?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm not a water expert, but it absolutely does hurt our water table. And it reduces our climate change resilience. It increases flooding.
That's kind of what I was thinking about with these corridors, helping with that. You know, we plant the right plants there for them to know that we can start, you know, reforesting, if you will, as we go through these wildfires. You know, you got to think about the heat that we've created by having asphalt. And, you know, it's like we've got to look at the heat impact we have created just with, you know, paving paradise, right? Honestly, you know, driving on a dirt road just isn't that bad. And then really looking at creating these corridors so that it also creates this more, it's like having a roof garden. It's cool. Yeah. It's really good. And the more vegetation we can put down and splitting
and
that up
vegetation.
Is good.
And
native.
You know, it's, we don't just want to plant big monoculture forests.
No.
That could hurt biodiversity. And so we want, you know, corridors are about rewilding. So bringing the natural space back to what it should look like, putting native plants back where they should be that can support native species, which in turn can support that habitat, that ecosystem, which supports us all. We're one big web.
We are. It is. It's the web of life. I love it. Or the tree of life. You know,
absolutely.
It's awesome. Thank you so much, Kate. It has been a real pleasure having you on the show. Please come back. Keep us posted. Whatever we can do is we can, you know, sign documents, call our representatives. We're all here. So let's do it.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Everyone, again, keep up with the International Fund for Animal Welfare at ifaw.org. I want to give a shout out and thank you to our sponsor, fine art and nature photographer Margot Carrera. She does so much in regards to taking care of our planet. She understands that taking care of our planets, our animals, our nature equals taking care of our people. So check out her website, CarreraFineArtGallery.com. And of course, keep up with us at BigBlendRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us.
Of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
All treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.